Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist, with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Lindsay May about her contemporary novel, Weak Teeth. Lindsay is an award-winning writer who lives, loves, and writes in Edinburgh. Her short fiction has been published in various journals and anthologies, including The Stinging Fly, Gutter, New Writing Scotland, and Banshee. In this episode, we discuss why Lindsay wanted to write about teeth, how her inspiration began with just one striking sentence, and why she chose to write an open ending. But first, here's Lindsay with an excerpt from Weak Teeth.
Reading in the sleepless wee hours is a torture and a comfort. She discovers that teeth were once considered totems of protection. A handful can be sprinkled, like salt, to create a protective circle. A single tooth can be burned to ward off a witch's curse. Scandinavian warriors of yore rode into battle with a string of baby teeth tied around their thick necks. Teeth are something to fear. Adrian always said she made too much of a fuss about her various fillings and chippings. He thinks teeth are just teeth. The more she reads, the more Ellis feels vindicated. But there's nothing to help her there, and it takes a long time to fall asleep, with teeth on her phone screen and sadness coiled around her insides. She wakes to the chirp of her alarm and wishes she hadn't. Today she has to get back to work. As Travelon's second newest employee, Ellis can't risk another sick day. She hadn't wanted to leave T-Zone, and she can't afford to leave Travelon now, even if she wanted to. She'd spent years tinkering with euphemisms for sweat, happily taking activewear samples home for Adrian and contributing to the tea kitty, thinking she was a valuable member of the team. Not valuable enough, obviously. She'd been so comfortable there. Never would have thought they'd choose her as one of the first to go. "Stop taking it personally," Adrian said. "Or if you really think you're the problem, fix it. Shame to lose the staff discount on thermal t-shirts, though." No wonder Adrian had been so relaxed about it. He was probably already screwing Sally. She's dreading the office. When she first started, redundancy raw and determined to be quietly likeable and efficient, Adrian was one of the few topics of conversation she'd been happy to indulge in. She'd wanted them to know she came verified by another human being. She's not ready to tell them. He's withdrawn his vote.
Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, Weak Teeth.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
So, Lindsay, can you start by introducing your novel for us? Tell us what Weak Teeth is about.
Of course, I would love to. So Weak Teeth is a book about Ellis, who's a young woman who discovers that her partner of over 10 years has been cheating on her. He kind of unceremoniously makes it known that he considers their flat his flat and that he's moved on without her. So with not like a whole lot of money in her bank account and not very many options, Ellis ends up back at her mom's house. And the breakup kind of exacerbates an already really tense relationship with her sort of forceful younger sister, Lana, And it sets Ellis off on a kind of, let's say, not optimal path. And throughout all of this, she's kind of dealing with this toothache that just won't quit.
Yeah. And I wondered, I mean, was teeth your starting point? Was the kind of like that theme the thing that propelled you to write this, or was the starting point something else? Because I know you write short stories, and I wondered whether you had kind of envisioned this always as a novel, or had it started life as a short story?
Yeah, so great question, because this definitely, it started, a lot of the things that I write start with like either a sentence or an image or like something quite specific, like a little tonal thing basically, and then either it grows or it doesn't. And this one started really specifically with the phrase, they were a family of strong bones and weak teeth, which did actually make it into the book in the end, but the book changed a lot between that little image and the end process. I did always know they wanted to be a novel, but it did change a lot along the way as well. It definitely originally had in my mind a more sort of generational, family-related book. I had the points of view of the mum and the sister were there initially, and then it turned into Ellis's story and ended up, you know, mainly focused on her and her journey. And even though it's kind of a breakup, like it's a book about a breakup, I think it's more a book about the family, really. So that kind of sort of stayed in that part, but the teeth were absolutely there from the very, very beginning. And it's like the only part of it that was really in any way autobiographical was the teeth related part.
The fear of the dentist and the kind of the growing, I think we all do it, don't we? Because dentists are horrible, whether you are someone who's afraid of it or not. And it's that always feeling of, oh, it'll be okay, I'm just going to leave it and hope for the best. And just, you know, that pain can just go into the background. And that's very much what you explore in this novel. And it's funny because I love writing about teeth, and they always weirdly crop up in what I write. Something like in your novel, you explore like how they're used in kind of like witchcraft and curse and things like that. And I wondered, like, why teeth? Like, you know, it seems like a strange question to ask. But I was wondering kind of where that theme came from, because I mean, it's a great topic. There's so many thematic strands of it in the novel, but why teeth?
Why teeth? So definitely, there's definitely like two parts of it. And one was the sort of more straightforward part, where just like having had some like very nasty experiences with my teeth over the years, and like when I was young, having some not great experiences with dentists that really, you know, kind of scarred me a little bit, I'd say. I've had a fear of dentists for years, and have not had the best teeth, and even though I've like done my best to look after them, I still have ended up visiting the dentist quite a lot. And then I was really lucky at one point, because I had a job in my sort of 20s that had insurance attached to it, and I got to see a very lovely dentist who helped me get over the fear of having to deal with problems with your teeth. So there's definitely that sort of autobiographical element, like I mentioned, that, you know, I was like, I can write about something that I'm really scared of. And that hopefully will come across, you know, the like actual fear will come across in the writing, in that sort of that write what you know, or write what you're really excited about. I was like, I'm going to go write what I'm really scared about, and see if that adds that like extra tension. So that was definitely part of it. And then the other side was definitely along the lines of, I mean, teeth are just one of those primal, like most people have them at some point. And we like we're told to look after them. We visit the dentist. We technically brush them every day. We're like constantly, you know, we see adverts for toothpaste. They're so normalized, but they're kind of like, you know, they're like bones. They're like parts of your inside that's on the outside, and we lose them. You know, we lose a set of them when we're kids, and then we get another set when we're adults. And it's just really weird. And I just really want to try about how weird it is.
No, you're right. Actually, reading the book maybe did make me think, yeah, that is very odd, which is probably why I'm always attracted to write about teeth and, you know, finding teeth. And it's the whole like tooth fairy thing as well, isn't it? It's like, I remember as a child, the day I found out the tooth fairy wasn't real was I was in my mum's bedroom looking for, she kept this really old like 80s vintage jewelry, and I was looking for that, opened up this little ceramic pot, and there were my teeth. And I was like, first of all, creepy as hell, but also like, it was a real moment thinking, oh, okay, the tooth fairy is not real. Mum's just been keeping my teeth. And that itself is weird. Like, that is, there's no going past that. That's just really weird. So yeah, I can see why that's such an appealing topic to write about.
My mom had a little pot with my teeth in it as well. And it was a much disgust that I would open it up and look at them and then put them away. It's like, you know, you're drawn to something that you really dislike. I would go back and look at it and be like, oh, it's horrible. And then put it back in the again.
But I did wonder, actually, because I saw in another interview that you did where you talked about kind of style and theme and how you were you're quite an experimental writer, and you're not really quite sure sometimes like where you're going or where you fit in the kind of genre at the side of it. And I wondered, you said this kind of novel changed and started at something somewhere else with this one sentence. Did you kind of explore more kind of weirder kind of body horror, fantastical kind of stuff when you started this novel, or had you always thought, okay, I'm writing a contemporary fiction novel?
Yeah, so this novel, I think I knew that this was probably going to be contemporary and a sort of, you know, in that kind of sphere from early on, especially, well, I guess I did experiment a bit. We did choose to cut because there were even more teeth-related facts and weird bits in there before, and then got a little bit intense maybe, so we did pull back on some of that, but I think I did know that I knew roughly what genre this novel would end up in when I started writing it, or once I got into it a little bit. But I definitely have enjoyed sort of playing around with fantasy elements in other books and tried to experiment in just writing in different styles to see what would suit. Definitely one of those people, like, I can't write consecutively or plot beforehand. I'm one of those, like, you just go where you go and then you try and piece it all together at the end, which I think doesn't necessarily, I mean, I might be wrong because I've never experienced it, but I don't think that necessarily suits some other genres that are more plot driven, because it's like, it's like the opposite. I'm like working the plot out as I go. I really like reading in lots of different genres and sort of dabbling, and it makes me feel as though I'm not entirely sure where I am, which one I like most or which one I sit in.
But I think it's fun to experiment and to kind of work out, you know, what I think writing is a mood thing anyway. Like, sometimes you just feel in the mood to write in a particular way. I mean, I'm sure all of us have had moments where we're feeling really angry and, you know, we end up writing something really violent or, you know, something like that. It is kind of mood dependent. I wanted to go back to the novel and touch on Ellis, and because obviously she drives the story, she's the main character, and I wondered kind of on a practical level, how did you build her as a character? Because she feels, I mean, obviously she's got this whole family around her, and the characters and the dynamic of the family is such an important part of the novel. But how did you kind of create Ellis and the family around her? Did you do kind of a lot of note-taking or thinking before you started writing? How did that all work?
Yeah, so Ellis definitely came about through this sort of, she kind of emerged slowly as I wrote, you know, loads of sort of interconnecting scenes, loads of ones with Lana and her mum. And I think quite often I am not starting with a strong idea of a character in mind either. I'm starting with a little like glimmer of who someone might be, and then they take a little while to reveal themselves. And Ellis definitely took a little while to turn into the person that she was. So it took quite a lot of drafting, I would say, to get to the point where I was like, oh, I feel like I actually know her problems and what she wants and where she's going. So yeah, I think it was a slow emergence rather than a, like, I've found a person and now I just need to work out how I'm going to portray them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And what about her family then? Did they come out of kind of writing scenes and thinking about how Ellis would react? Or did they, I mean, Lana particularly is a really vital part of the story and Ellis's life. Did you feel like you had to do kind of separate work on them to build them? Or did they just kind of come from working on Ellis's character?
Yeah, I think they definitely all came, like, they definitely kind of grew together and in opposition to each other as well, if that makes sense, where it's a kind of like they were playing off each other in a way that I was like, no, I see how this dynamic is working or not working. And I think because at the heart the book is really about the kind of the ways that you can get stuck in situations or your family or your circumstances or your life or the whatever's been dealt to you, so it can mold who you are, even accidentally. So Ellis is very much molded by her position in the family, and the fact that Lana's got quite a forceful personality, and maybe she's kind of edged Ellis out a little bit or pushed Ellis inwards in a way that in a different family setting, she might have been a different person. So in kind of wanting to explore that, it definitely helped sort of give backbone to the characters when I was trying to build them, because I was thinking about how they were interplaying and how the dynamic had changed as they'd grown up together.
Yeah.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And one thing I thought you did really well was your kind of descriptions of people and certain images in the novel. One example that I highlighted, which I really enjoyed, was You described a woman's hair like the short bristled brush Ursa's grandmother kept hanging with a dustpan on the back of a cupboard door. And I just thought it was just so vivid. I could just picture that hair so strongly. And I wondered whether that kind of imagery and metaphorical writing comes kind of easily to you, or is that something you have to work at?
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. That makes me very happy. I think that, yes, I think it does come relatively easily in the first instance, in that often, definitely in the first draft, when I'm still feeling my way to what a book is going to be, or even if it's going to turn into a book, or if it's just going to be a dabble or a short story or something, it's these little descriptions or turns of phrases that come first and that I enjoy. And then later, it's the kind of trying to find the way to build a whole world around them, basically. So they come more easily to me than some of the bits that could be technically easier, like constructing just a chapter that flows. But also saying that they come easily, I have been known to really torture a metaphor, and sometimes they have to be just put down.
So we all do it, so yeah. Not a surprise. I wanted to touch on the ending as carefully as possible without spoilers. And I think one thing I really liked about the ending was that it's left in a way that we feel like there's more story to come, but there's things that are tied up, but there are certain aspects of the storyline that we're left to kind of think about and think, okay, what do we think will happen next? And I love that in an ending. I just think it gives the reader so much to take away. Like, you feel satisfied, but you also feel like there's more there, that the story lives on beyond the pages. And I wondered kind of how working out the ending was for you, whether it was a deliberate choice to kind of leave it like this kind of open ending, or whether you kind of toyed with a neater ending, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely a choice, and something that I really, really enjoy in books is that exact sort of thing that you're describing, where when the book finishes, you don't necessarily have a definitive answer to all of your questions, and then it leaves you free to kind of, as a reader, enjoy perhaps thinking about what might happen, what could happen, what you would like to happen. So definitely something that I chose and worked towards. I find it almost more difficult to write those kinds of endings and have them be satisfying, because I know a lot of people very much enjoy having a, like, the book is closed, we're done, we have everything tied up neatly. So as you were saying, it's like trying to find a way to satisfy that desire while also like indulging my own desire to like leave a little bit of space for interpretation, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance, and I try to do that as well, and it is hard. And I think you can't please every reader. There are some readers that do want everything tied up neatly, which, like you said, is perfectly fine. And I've certainly read books myself where I haven't felt satisfied by the ending and I've wanted more. So it's really that difficult, like, balance between how much you give away and how much you hold back. But I think when you're telling a kind of story like yours, where it's like a family kind of domestic story almost, that, you know, most families don't have that kind of moment where everything's happy and tied up and satisfied. You know, there's always ongoing problems and issues in families, so I think it reflects that well. I'd love to go back in time and talk about where your writing journey began, like how you got into writing. Have you always written? Have you always wanted to write a novel? Tell us a little bit about your writing background.
Yeah, amazing. So yes, I have definitely always wanted to write. I remember being very young, as I think many writers do, and having that first little like A4 paper stapled together, I've done a book moment. Definitely had that. My grandma, Alison Darkle, was a writer, so she was a big inspiration, and I had a very bookish and quite arty family, so that had, you know, definitely from a young age thought this is what I really like. And then kind of there was high school, university, And I was like, not seeing a way to be writing, making money. The idea that it was possible had kind of gone away for me. And then in my like mid-20s, I went back to uni and did a 1 year MSc, which in some ways I think I wasn't actually ready for, even though I was already in my mid-20s at that point. I don't know that I had the right, I don't know if skills is the right word, but I don't know if I was ready in my like writing journey or thoughts about writing to be having that experience. But I did, and then I didn't write for a little bit afterwards because I think sometimes it kind of, it's not that it put me off, but it certainly set me back maybe for a little while. As often happens when you're studying something that you really like, you forget that you actually like it. So that happened, and then it from there is like a really long journey of writing books and trying to get them published and trying to find people that enjoyed them. And it took quite a while to end up with Weak Teeth and the publication.
So have you written like a lot of other full novels, or had you kind of started things and given them up?
But definitely a combination of both. definitely a few that just never quite made it past that like magic point where it's just a bunch of words and then maybe it's a novel. But I have completed several other books that you know, were of a sort of, the only word I can think of is completed, like they were like done beforehand.
And you were the recipient of the Scottish Book Trust New Writers Award, and I was wondering kind of how that changed your writing journey.
It was really lovely, and it came at a time where I really needed that little vote of confidence, which was perfect. It wasn't the first time that I applied for it. I applied and was rejected several times, several years before getting one. So that was a lesson in itself to just keep persevering, and it definitely helped give me that little boost. As any sort of, I'm a big advocate for any prizes or journals or anything that you can submit to when you're trying to have a book published, because it can be quite a difficult and a long process for many people. Like sometimes any little burst of encouragement could be really, really valuable, and I definitely found that with them. And the Scottish Book Trust are a lovely, lovely bunch. So lovely that several years later they had a vacancy in their writing communities team, and now I work for them 2 days a week, so they just couldn't get rid of me.
So what does that job involve? Is it working with other creatives, or kind of is it a kind of teaching job? What does it involve?
Yeah, so I have a background in copywriting, and the rest of the time I freelance as a copywriter and online sort of content creator. And my role in the team is to sort of support they have various programs that work with writers at various stages of their careers. And I support with their online presence, basically. So commissioning blogs and doing the newsletters and things like that, which is a lovely.
Nice, definitely nice to be involved kind of in that environment. I think even if you know, even if you're not writing, it's nice to be in a kind of creative bubble like that. I was wondering, when it comes to kind of your writing of this book, what was the most challenging aspect of it?
Well, part of the most challenging aspect for me, I think for a lot of people, and certainly something that comes back for me a lot, is the idea that like writing, you have to put quite a lot of faith in what you're doing, because it can be a massive, massive project that takes a long, long time. But it can be hard to keep the confidence up, whether you're, you know, waiting to be published or hoping to be published or then working on your next book. It just requires so much faith to keep going. And this book particularly, because I had chosen Teeth and I was like, this is quite a Marmite, like this is either going to work for me or people are going to be like, no, Luckily, mainly it seems to have worked, although some people are put off, which I completely understand, having a fear of dentists myself. So there was a definite point relatively early on where I was like, am I doing the right thing? Should I try and write something safer? Or should I give this up and see if I can find a different angle? And then just decided to persevere and hope that the fact that it freaked me out, it would touch a chord with other people.
So can you tell us kind of how you came to get your book deal in? And it sounds like it's been kind of quite a long journey to get there, but I'd love if you could kind of tell us the kind of steps involved to get in the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thing was finding my agent, and it took a while, as it often does, and it was with Weak Teeth that I managed to find her. And I knew initially that I really wanted her because we they list the books that they like on their pages. And I was like, oh, I like so many books that she likes. I really hope that this works out. And then it did, and that was fantastic. And then we worked she's got a strong editorial eye, which was great because I really enjoy the editing process. And also I trusted her insights and takes. So we did quite a lot of the editing before taking it to submissions, which meant the book was already in very much its sort of final state when we sold it.
Yeah. And so once your book was sold, you're with an indie publisher based in Edinburgh, Polygon. How much work did you do with them? And like editorially, once I know you said the book was in a good shape, how long did you kind of spend kind of polishing it and making it ready to go out into the world?
You know, I feel like I have blocked out how long it took. I don't remember. It didn't take too long. I had a lovely editor there, Alison Ray, who was great, and we did some the usual sort of back and forth on stylistically, do we want this, do we want that, how are we going to polish this up, changing a few of my idiosyncratic habits into a little bit more house style here and there. But it was a relatively painless process, and because it was the first time I'd had quite that experience, it was good. I think it definitely helps having that background in copywriting, where I've worked with a lot of clients I've written something and they've just ripped it to shreds. So I feel like I have quite a thick skin when it comes to edits and changes that, you know, normally not too traumatic.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I enjoy the editing process, and I think you do have to be slightly resilient, but at the end of the day, everyone wants the best for your book, and that's what you've got to try and keep in mind. So I was wondering whether, obviously, you've experienced being a debut for a while now, and I wondered what your advice would be to next year's cohort of debut authors, and whether you had something you wish you'd known before you started the process, kind of a way to cope with the ups and downs, or something that you think, if I could pass this one bit of advice on, this is what it would be.
Yeah, I think there wasn't a one thing that I think that I wish that I had known, but part of that is because I've had a really long journey to get here, and part of that journey has been making friends with loads of writers at loads of different stages of their career. So a lot of aspiring writers and a lot of hopeful writers, a lot of published writers. So I'd ended up hearing a lot about the publishing process, a little bit, seeing a lot from, you know, what goes on behind the curtain beforehand, which was really helpful for me in like managing expectations or having an idea of how things might work out. And it also really showed me, and has shown me over the years, how different everyone's journey can be. Like even two writers even if they had the exact same agent and they were at the same publishing house, they still could have a very different experience of publication, and you just can't make those direct comparisons. And if you have only a small data pool to draw from, you might, you know, go in and have your expectations confounded in a good or bad way, I guess. But my advice is definitely just to talk to as many people as you can and gather as much information as you can, listen to podcasts like this, like find people online that are in similar situations and just chat, and remember that everybody's journey is going to be a little bit different.
It is hard because you're always going to meet people that are going to be probably more successful than you, less successful than you, or someone that's had a great time, someone that's had a bad time. I think as well, it's difficult because this is why I think making friends is so important, making writer friends and people who are maybe one stage ahead of you or one stage behind you, because the publishing industry is weird and opaque and confusing sometimes, and it's really helpful just to be able to say to someone, is this normal, you know, am I doing the right thing, or whatever it is. So I think, yeah, having that kind of, having those contacts and being able to ask those questions without fear of looking stupid or, you know, being embarrassed to ask the questions if you don't feel comfortable asking your agent or your editor. But yeah, you're right, friends, community is just so important. And also, thanks for the plug, Lindsay. Everyone should be listening to this podcast. So finally, Lindsay, can you give us a little bit of a tease about what you're working on next?
I can, although I'm one of those really annoying people that can't reveal too much until they're really far through the process. As I was saying earlier, I tend to take a while to find my way into a book, so it can change drastically, but it's definitely going to be set in Scotland, and it will probably be, it will be another contemporary piece of fiction.
Right. And the rest,
that's it.
Is the mystery.
It's going to be a bit...
do you think Teeth might appear again at some point?
I think I'll be hard pushed not to mention Teeth, because I was definitely writing about them already, but also post-publication, as I prepare myself for, everybody has a terrible story to tell me about their teeth. So yeah. I have like gathered a lot of extra information.
You're probably going to have endless stories now about people's teeth or dentist experiences. Just exactly what you want when you want to recover from a fear of dentists, but then we can.
Exactly.
Lindsay, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fab.
That was Lindsay May talking about her contemporary novel, Weak Teeth, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.